Well, hey, everyone, you know, if you read our e-newsletter and other stuff we have going on here at Boundless, that not too long ago, I had the privilege of being part of our Alive from New York event in Times Square. And we had a Boundless meetup there, and I got to co-host our simulcast. And it was just really, I mean, chills to be there as a 4D ultrasound was broadcast there really for the world to see, and to see the hush come over the crowd. And, you know, we're having this conversation heading towards 50 years after Roe v. Wade was legalized. And I think it really makes a difference when we can put a face on life and realize that these are not just public policy issues, but they're real women's lives and babies' lives. And so today's guest, I want to introduce you to Laura Hughes. She is the author of Choose Zoe. And actually, it's a story of unplanned parenthood and the case for life. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lisa.
Well, you have quite a story that you detail in this book, and obviously are very involved in pro-life activities now. But I want you to talk a little bit to our audience, first off, about your background, because you grew up Catholic and considered yourself very pro-life, and yet found yourself with an unplanned pregnancy at age 15. Tell us about just that moment and what went through your mind.
Well, absolutely. For one, I was not prepared for sex. That's for sure. And it's meant to really bond us together. And in that context, in marriage, bring forth children. And so finding out that I had an unexpected pregnancy, which really led to unplanned parenthood, I was fearful, but I was also very contemplative. And as I felt the baby growing inside of me, my love for her grew so much that even though I had a terrible relationship with my boyfriend, and society was against unplanned pregnancies. And I, you know, was concerned about what my parents would think and people in the church. I still really just kind of resonated off that love that I had for my child. And I think that that's why the outcome for her was so positive, is was because I was able to remember the things that my family had taught me, remember the things my church had taught me, and accept life even though I had been disobedient.
Yeah. I think one of the coolest things that you detail in the book is just the reaction of your parents and, you know, probably not expecting this, figuring that this wouldn't be part of your story or their story. Talk through what that looked like when you finally were able to tell them and how they responded.
Yeah, it was totally amazing. I let everybody guess that I was pregnant. And when my mother found out, she told me she was going to tell Dad on the way home from the airport. So I called my boyfriend, and we went and hid in the church parking lot. at least we kind of knew where to go, right? And I came home in the middle of the night about 3:30, thinking I could sneak in before my dad would be up reading the Bible. And when I walked in the door, I just looked at him, took one look at him. He stood up, and I just burst into tears. And he came over to me and embraced me and told me how much that he loved me and that Mom told him that I was pregnant, that I was going to have a child, and that all he asked was that I would pray every day what was best for my baby, whether it was me raising her with, you know, some of their guidance, or whether it was me placing her in loving arms of people waiting to adopt. And then he said, get to bed. You have school in a couple of hours. Hmm. And so that day I really felt grace from a parent, and I feel like it's that same thing that the prodigal son must have had after he messed up so bad. And, you know, he came home, and if you remember that story, you remember that the dad plays God, right? And he runs to that son and puts his arms around him, and he did the same thing that my dad did to me. And so that's the real heart of a father, the real picture of what a dad does when we come home and come home to our senses.
Yeah, sure. Well, and again, just thinking that you were 15 years old. So you had, I mean, this obviously rocked your world and changed the way that you lived into your 20s and beyond, really the rest of your life. And we probably have a fair number in our audience, Laura, who you know, have either had babies at young ages, whether a teenager or early 20s and unmarried, or maybe they've had abortions. What would you say was kind of most pivotal in your story leading into young adulthood that really made you come, you know, have to grapple with what your life was going to look like moving forward? And what would be some strategies that you would share for others who are in the same spot?
Well, I think that having the child at 15, I gave birth to her at 16, and that was joyous. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing like the smell of a new baby and holding her. But, you know, she was raised without a dad, and she was raised in poverty. And within 1 year, like many statistics, I also was pregnant again. And that little boy was born at 22 weeks, and he was not so lucky. Mm. And so experiencing great joy and then great heartache in one child that, you know, that I gave birth to and one child that I miscarried, it was so much emotion that we're not prepared for. So I was, you know, welcomed into postpartum loss, which is very, very tough. So all of those things combined were way too much for me at a young age, coupled with, you know, not a good relationship with my boyfriend. And so they really kind of set me up for heartache. And then they also set me up for more sexual immorality. And I had three unplanned pregnancies by 21 years old. I had a broken heart. And when we walk away from God's absolute truth, that's what happens is, you know, we end up with a broken heart. We end up with, you know, abortions or STIs or children that are, you know, raised without another parent. And so many things that we do, and that's the message I'd really love to get to the listeners, is the decisions that we make day by day, listening to the culture, listening to, you know, what sexual freedom is, all of those things are meant to just cause destruction in our lives. You know, and society feeds to us that we can be free, we can have sexual freedom, but it actually creates bondage in our lives. We become enslaved by, you know, the immorality. And so any decisions that we make can be undone and redeemed by the power of God. So I pray that your listeners will wake up and will understand that even if they've made mistakes, even if they have had children outside of wedlock, babies are always a blessing. So sexual immorality is sin. It keeps us from God. It keeps us, our eyes off of God and onto a relationship. And so any of the things that are causing division in your life are definitely not from the Lord. And he has better for us. He sent his son Jesus to give us the, you know, the wonderful life now, the best life here on earth. And so whatever we have done or whatever has been done to us, God wants us to stop in our tracks right now and choose his ways, choose his moral truths, because that's when we're going to be fulfilled. That's when we're going to really feel free, and that's what we're all seeking for, is to be set free and to be loved and to experience life and good relationships. And it's just never too late for us. I was way older than your audience by the time I got it together and accepted the love of the Lord. I always went to church. I felt like I knew God, but something was still always missing. So sometimes when you open yourself up to sexuality and pregnancy and things when you're way too young, it kind of stops your growth process. Mm. But that is something that the Bible talks about, where it's stolen from us, the years that are stolen from us, that God can give those back to us. Mm. And we can always make a new choice for righteousness and godliness and making good decisions. That's the beauty of it.
Mm-hmm. So I think, Laura, what a lot of the culture will say and people in the culture, and we're seeing this even now publicly in the media and beyond, is, well, okay, Laura, what you should have done is you should have just taken matters into your own hands, and you weren't prepared to care for that baby, and you weren't prepared to have these three pregnancies. And so, you know, abortion is the answer, or doing what you need to do on your timetable to solve the problem and make this happen. What would be your argument to folks who say that? And then what really was that pivotal point in your own story that turned your understanding of God around?
Well, I definitely know that the the pivotal time in my story was just over and over knocking my head against the same sin. And when you keep having habitual sin, it gets worse each time. And so, you know, I wasn't a quick learner when it came to disobedience. And when we understand that being obedient to God's laws is actually a good thing, we're created for love, we're created to thrive, and, you know, we're created for that real openness that can only come from a relationship with the Lord. We can seek all kinds of things, like that prodigal son. He had the inheritance, he blew it, he had money, he had prostitutes, you know, he just blew it all. And one day we wake up and we're just not happy. We can feel empty, we can feel lonely, and the only thing that is going to fill that is the truth of God. The only thing that's going to fill that is the love of the Lord.
Hmm. Well, I know that you had your daughter Erica, and she now has kids of her own. And even in her story, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I think everyone would say, oh, okay, well, Laura can say that because her story's just wrapped up with a bow, and I'm sure everything became easy after that. And, you know, they'll look at your story. I mean, you volunteer at your local pregnancy clinic and mobile unit. You're the founder of A Movement of Love. Yet even, you know, sometimes it's hard to break cycles, like you said, of sin. And tell us about how that played out in your own daughter's story as she found herself pregnant.
Well, you know, it's generational. So there's things that need to be broken generationally. And so just because I chose life, it doesn't set you up to know for sure what your own children will do, because the lies are so prominent in our culture. And when my daughter was faced with an unplanned pregnancy, she didn't tell anyone. This is very common. You listen to the world. You listen to just take care of it. You can finish college. And the world wants to feed you so many lies, like you're going to be poor, you're not going to be able to go to college, you're not married, what are people going to think? But if you can just silence that noise long enough, you can realize that you can climb that hill, you can overcome those obstacles. And my daughter has, after her healing, after her abortion, been able to climb those obstacles, and it's that road to redemption. So God always gives us a road to redemption. And my life has not been a tiny little bow. Because of my decisions in my early teens and 20s, not only myself, but my children still suffer consequences for that. And I know that most people that see me now and they think, oh, well, look where she's come. She must have an easy life now. No. There's still ramifications of kids with different dads. There's still divorce in my life. There are things that I have to help my children get through and climb over in order to succeed in life, in order to accept Christ. My kids are tremendous. They all are really tremendous, and they're doing such a good job in society, and they're caring for others, and they're educated. And all of those things are statistics that, you know, the world said they shouldn't have made those accomplishments being raised by a teen mom. So, yeah, things might look glorious, but there was some really tough things to get through. That's why I like being at the center, mm-hmm. because then I'm in the center of people's stuff, and I remember what it felt like, and I remember what helped me, and I remember what brought me hope.
Yeah.
And we can all do that for other people. The scripture tells us to encourage one another, and we can all do that no matter what our story is.
Yeah, so I know you mentioned in the book, even stories of some of the women who come into the center as you're working there, including, I mean, it's just mind-boggling, but even 12-year-old girls walking in there. What's your message of hope to them, Laura? Because I know, you know, I think we understand, or maybe we don't understand enough as the church, that ground on this issue and in people's lives isn't going to be gained in an angry space. But really, what do these young girls and women need to hear? What do they need to understand?
Well, they need hope. They need someone to celebrate them, their life, and the life of their child. And when they can take the focus off of all of their problems and their anxiety and the bad relationship, and when they can focus on the love that they have for their child, just like my dad asked me to pray every day what was best for my baby. When you get the focus onto the baby, then something beautiful can happen. I mean, imagine how the Virgin Mary was, right? When she finds out that she's got this unexpected to her, but not unplanned by God by any means. But imagine how she felt way back then as a teenager. And what she said was, "Be it unto me." And it said she would ponder these things in her heart. And so when she got her focus on Jesus, literally on the baby in the womb, then she was able to silence all of the culture, all of the things that were going to attack her and come against her. And Joseph was able to come into play too, because there's always a young man. And many times the young men come into the center. And I love that, because the majority of men say, whatever you want to do. They bought into a lie that it's the woman's choice, woman's body, and they say whatever you want to do. And when that happens, the girls always tell me they felt hopeless. They felt like the guy didn't want the baby, even if he didn't say it. So there's power in a young man's words. And it's time for the men, too, to come along and take responsibility, but also share love for the child. And it's a total lie that men shouldn't have a conversation or a voice concerning the unborn or abortion. It's their children, for goodness sakes. It's their family. It's their future. They definitely have a voice. And so when they abdicate their responsibility and they tell the woman, it's okay, whatever you decide, you know, I'll support you, that usually means, you know, it's fine to take the life of the unborn.
Yeah. So what would you say, what is your advice to men who may be listening, who may have, you know, be in that exact situation? What course of action should they take and what should they say to, you know, I think a lot of times they're told by women, well, this has nothing to do with you, or this isn't your business, or it's not your decision. What, you know, what would be your advice to them?
Just for them to offer support. You know, anything you would do for a friend if they were having any other type of problem, just offer that love and that support and let them know that you'll be standing by their side, that you can do this. And, you know, for men to know that there really are absolute truths in the Bible. There's morality. There's absolute truths. And when they stick by those absolute truths, then they will always have a positive outcome when it comes to their decisions when a girl may be pregnant. And this doesn't even have to be their own child. Mm-hmm. This can be their sister becomes pregnant. Men are so powerful in their voice and authority, and they are made to love, and they are made to lead the family and provide and protect for the children. And so when they stand up and they say, I'll support you, I'll find you the kind of help that you need, whether it's their child in the womb or not. That's what Joseph did. But be reminded, an angel had to come and talk to Joseph and say, hey, you're going to take care of that child, you're going to be the father, and you're going to marry Mary. That's the first thing that the angel had to do. So as a society, we need to do that. As a society, we need to say, you know, let's support you in taking care of the children. Let's promote family. Let's not just put everything on the young girl where she has to feel hopeless and alone. So men are powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What men say, we take to heart.
Yeah.
And men are still the number one coercers of abortion. The second is the mother. But the man is always the most powerful voice for the decision that the young lady is going to make.
Yeah. Well, I think because we have been hearing the topic of life and abortion so much in the news and legislatively, I hear from a lot of women who will say, oh, well, you know, no, I'm pro-life. I don't want abortion, but, you know, Lisa, here's a great example. Like, what if, you know, what if my child in the womb, they discover that he or she has Downs? Or what if I'm a rape victim? And they start putting parameters on it, which kind of takes away the definition of life itself. What would you say, what do you say to the women who kind of start putting out arguments against, you know, the personhood of the baby in those circumstances?
Well, I don't know, for starters, I don't know one woman who was even raped and had a child that may have made felt suicidal. I have never heard any of them say they regretted having that child. Hmm. So for one, they always say the child, helped me want to live again because they were, you know, distraught over the rape. And then there's the people that say, oh, how on earth can I raise a child with Down syndrome? Well, there's so many resources out there where you can connect with other people who have raised those little darlings to where, you know, again, it's the education that we get. It's being informed. And the people that raise a Down syndrome child always say that that child brought more joy into the house, taught them to really love. And then there's also false diagnosis in the womb. I had false diagnosis in the womb. And so if I would have taken my child's life, then I would have never known that she was perfectly healthy. So for one, that's my youngest daughter, Mary. So little Mary, I was pregnant with, and I went in and it was an oblated ovum. The people that love medical can look into that. Basically a sperm and an egg meet. There's a pregnant sac, but there's no life in the womb. And I told the doctor, I said, I am not having an abortion. And he said, it's not an abortion. It's a DNC. I said, that's the same thing they do. And I said, I'm not taking life. And he says, lady, there's no life in your womb. And I walked out of that hospital room, and I threw the door open, and I looked up into the sky, and I held my finger up, and I said, God, you raised Lazarus from the dead. Now breathe life into my baby. A few weeks later, they found the baby. So back up even further to when she was 7 months in my womb, and her femurs were too short, her head was too big, she had a lot of fluid, so then they thought she was a dwarf and was going to have mental retardation. And it just went on and on. She was born premature. Her lungs weren't developed. That night, they said she wouldn't live through the night. And I just said, ha, you don't decide life. Well, my daughter Mary just gave birth on Sunday to twin baby girls, my 9th and 10th grandbabies. And so if I had taken Mary's life, which they said there was no life, they said it was not a good pregnancy, if I had listened to the doctors and taken her life, I would have not had her in my life, and I would not have her son, and I would not have twin grandbabies that were just born. I was just in the hospital last night holding two babies in my arm and just looking back and forth, head going back and forth, and my arms and heart were so full of love. And when we listen to doctors sometimes and we don't listen to God, we can cut off our family blessings. But then your heart goes out to someone whose story didn't end up like mine. There's so much pregnancy loss,
right,
with infertility and miscarriage and stillborn, and there's so much healing available there. Not everyone has my story, but everyone has a part of God's story.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think it's so important for us as believers, whether young adults in our audience or others, to encourage, to speak up on behalf for life, but also to encourage the moms and the dads who are making these tough decisions. And that's why I think the title of your book, Choose Zoe, is so important, meaning Zoe, meaning the abundant life, and how really it's bigger than just a single baby or a single decision. It really is affirming God's what God says about life and about his creation. And so I think your story, Laura, is really shedding light on that. So thanks so much for being part of the conversation with your book, Choose Zoe.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I just bless your entire audience with making good decisions in your life that will cause you to live that abundant, eternal life that can start here right now today on earth, as it is in heaven, right?
Excellent.